Welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Teffet here in the studio with the heathen Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest today is Pastor Robert Jeffers. I'm sorry. I get you too confused. Pastor Neil Cazares Thomas from Cathedral of Hope. Let's just get it out there. Why does your church hate gay people?
Well, if I was Robert Jeffress, I probably could answer that question. But the truth is, of course, Cathedral of Hope is one of the largest predominantly LGBT congregations in the world. And so we will certainly do not hate gay people. In fact, we're not just open and affirming, we open and celebrate all people.
So. Well, you know something? Hold on.
Yeah.
That mic wasn't going.
Oh,
that's why we weren't here.
Yeah, that's what I was like.
that was me.
I mean, I have to say all of that
I
again.
Can say all of it again.
You can say it again. I'm sorry. I'm busy closing up from the last show and starting this one. And our other Patty just came in. Welcome.
Okay. Josh Chris Petty.
So you were telling us why your church hates gay people.
I was saying that if I was Bobby, if I was Dr. Jeffress, I probably could answer that question. But at Cathedral of Hope, of course, we're one of the largest, predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly LGBT congregations in the world. And so we're not just open and affirming, we are open and celebrating all people, wherever they are on their life's journey. They're welcome at Cathedral of Hope. And it's an honor, really, to pastor such an incredible and historic congregation.
Have you ever asked any of the straight people in your congregation, why the hell do you go to this church?
Yeah, I have actually. And they come up with several reasons. One is they either grew up United Church of Christ, which is the denomination that Cathedral of Hope is a part of. And so when they move to Dallas, they're looking for a United Church of Christ. And so they come across us.
Yours is just a nice one.
Well, I think we're the most fabulous. But I would be biased. And I've got great United Church of congregation in Dallas. The other thing is that they've got gay friends. Or that they can no longer be in evangelical congregations where they constantly hear all this negative stuff about LGBT people. Mm-hmm. And they're just done. And so they look for something more progressive. And, of course, the natural place is us.
And, of course, President Obama was the United Church of Christ.
Yes, he was.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. So we're in good company.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the denomination, because I think a lot of people in Dallas know about Cathedral of Hope and don't know as much about United Church of Christ.
Yep. So it's kind of interesting being in Dallas, because that's not where I'm from. But coming to Dallas.
Really?
You have such a Texas accent.
I know. Y'all.
tell us, where are you from?
From England. From the south coast of England, a place called Bournemouth. Or as it's often pronounced, Bournemouth. It's actually Bournemouth. Although it makes sense, because Bournemouth actually means it's on the River Bourne, it's the mouth of the River Bourne. So, Bournemouth actually probably would be okay. So the United Church of Christ is not to be confused with the Church of Christ, which is a predominantly denomination that's here in Texas. And so people always say to me, you're United Church of Christ? And I always have to say, not Church of Christ, United Church of Christ. So as conservative as the Church of Christ is, the United Church of Christ is as liberal. So we're on the completely other end. We would probably use the word progressive now. And so the denomination is about 100 years old. It was the bringing together of the Reformed congregations and the congregational congregations around America. And in Canada, it's the Uniting Church, and Australia and England, it's the United Reformed Church.
Yeah, one thing I like to say about the denomination is that when fundamentalists like Robert Jeffress talks about the founding fathers and their religious beliefs, well, they were mostly congregationalists.
Yes, they were.
So I like to remind them that, oh, okay, so you mean the founding fathers whose beliefs were more Cathedral of Hope than First Baptist Church.
Yep. And, evangelical spirituality, Christianity in America is probably only about 50 years old. It's a relatively new experience. Now that they've done a great job in building that kind of ethos, that mm-hmm. theology, but they're not an old denomination at all.
So let's go back to Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
How did you get from Bournemouth to Dallas?
Yep. So I'm actually part of the Metropolitan Community Churches. That's where I have my roots. Although before that, I was Mormon, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
And those are similar.
Very similar. So my family were Mormons, born into a Mormon family. But we'd left the Mormon church by the time I was about 9 years of age.
So let's go back before you get to that. How did a Mormon family get to the south coast of England?
That's where we were converted to Mormonism, in the south coast of England. Mm-hmm. So Mormon missionaries came to England, and we were part of the early movers of the Mormon tradition in England. And I always tell people, anything more exciting than the Church of England would grab your attention. So the Mormon church was really a bit more exciting, and so that's where we went, that's where we ended up. And I will say, I have great, great memories of the Mormon tradition. We left the Mormon tradition because my mom and dad had divorced, and my mom wanted to remarry, and he was not a Mormon. And so the church refused to give her a wedding. And so my mom said basically, well, bye, and we left. But what that has taught me, even right to today, is that there's a big difference between churchianity and Christianity. There's a big difference between religious dogma and the way of Jesus, as we might say today.
I like that, churchianity.
Churchianity.
It's kind of like religiosity, churchianity.
And churches make up rules all the time, and so that's why there's so many different denominations. So we left the Mormon church, and then as I got a little bit into my adolescence, I started attending church again. By the time I was 14, I was pretty clear that I was a gay man, or a gay boy at that point. The week before my 15th birthday, I was actually introduced to Metropolitan Community Church in Bournemouth, England, where I stayed and was there right the way through until I left England and came to America. I went to seminary when I was 18, graduated when I was 22, ordained when I was 23.
All of this in England.
And then pastored that church in Bournemouth for close to 13 years. About 10 or 11 years into my tenure, the Los Angeles church was potentially looking for a new minister, and I was asked if I would consider coming to America. I was 35 at the point, and felt like a good move. And so I found myself at Founders Metropolitan Community Church, which was the founding church of the denomination.
Troy Perry's church.
And in fact, I was Troy's pastor for 13 years. And of course, some of you know Troy visited us in Dallas just
recently. A wonderful visit that was.
It was an incredible
visit. And Laron, you were talking to me before, what other guests we need to have on. He already said he'd come on as a guest. I just need to call him and arrange it.
Incredible. And he's really my mentor, my model, my example. Mm-hmm. And, so pastored him for the last 13 years, and then came to Dallas just over 2 years ago, where I'm now pastor Cathedral of Hope.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like, or the difference between America and England, as far as, I guess, somewhere like in the States, to this day, it's still, for a lot of people, like an oxymoron, a gay Christian, let alone openly gay reverend. So, I mean, is it that extreme over in England? What is it like?
No, it's kind of interesting. I can never give short answers, so I'll try to be as brief as I can. But the truth is that, there's a very different experience of Christianity or even religion in England versus the United States. So in England, they would say that about 9% of the population attend any religious experience over a weekend. So 9%. Here in the States, the census is about 58 to 60% of the population would attend church or religious experience over a weekend. So there's dramatic differences in numbers of attenders to start with. And then, predominantly here in the U.S., or I should say the dominant voice, because I don't think it is predominant, but the dominant voice here is that evangelical conservative Christianity.
They're just louder.
They are louder, and they've got the press. They've got their voice. But the truth is that what we see today about evangelical Christianity, which is slowly dying here in the United States, if you see the church attendance is in decline across the board, is that much of what they preach on is really the teachings of the Apostle Paul. more than Jesus.
And Paul was quite the misogynist.
He was absolutely the misogynist. And I don't think that Paul ever wrote the letters, even if Paul did write the letters, but he never wrote those letters as dogma. They were written for a time, for a period, for a group of people. Now there's great lessons in there, but as a Christian, I have to always revert to Jesus. And so, you know, the four Gospels become far more important to me. And, you know, Jesus placed out his mandate in the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek. You know, talks so much about being on the side of the poor, the disenfranchised, those who are the marginalized in society. And, you know, quite honestly, if evangelical churches did that, instead of getting so pent up about marriage equality or about, you know, some of the other bigger issues, you know, women, about just, and certainly this political move of the evangelical church, we would be in a very different, we would not have homelessness in Dallas, or indeed around the country, if these evangelical, if every church took seriously the mandate we've been given by Jesus at the Sermon on the Mount. We would have a very different, and we certainly wouldn't be dealing with the political system that we do right now, because it just would not be supported.
I think the best example of that was what went on in Houston when the largest church that meets in a huge arena said, oh, we can't take people in because they didn't ask us to. They asked mm-hmm. us to just distribute mm-hmm. some things. We were flooded, when it turns out they weren't.
They weren't.
Whereas small churches, and I know one of the synagogues, mm-hmm. had some severe damage in part of the building, so the way they solved the problem was they opened up the other part of the building. Yeah. You know, you do what you can.
And if you do what you can, if everybody does what they can, regardless of religious affiliation, if everyone did what they could, we would not be the country that we are today, sure. or even the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great model, whether we believe in something or don't believe in something. You know, I think at the very base of us as human beings, we know it's about us. It can't just be about me. And that's an important teaching that I think Jesus and many of the other, you know, great spiritual leaders have taught us. We ignore for wealth or for power or for domination.
Mm-hmm. And for our Jewish listeners, just to translate, the Reverend was talking about Paul as one of the apostles, and there's John, and there's George, and there's Ringo. And,
just to help us out, right?
I'm just, it's just a little guide there.
Where do you go with that?
Right. Yeah, it's like sometimes I look at Laurent and Patty, and I just go, okay. Get me out of here. Because I'm just talking nonsense here. Fortunately, we're here with a friend who's looking at me and is thinking, yeah, he really is as pachotted as I always thought.
Do you know of another congregation that's as large as Cathedral of Hope that serves the predominantly LGBT community?
No, Cathedral of Hope is actually known now as the largest predominantly LGBT congregation in the world. We're about a 4,500 member congregation. I would say that we...
It's a mega church.
Yeah, I guess so. But we probably worship at around about 1,200 on a Sunday morning.
Which is not mega church.
It's not mega, but it's certainly large. Mm-hmm. In the United Church of Christ, we're one of the top 10. Of the congregations, in the United Church of Christ, as in now every mainline denomination. Now, that's a difference between mainline and evangelical conservative, but in the mainline tradition now, every denomination, with the exception of the United Methodist Church, both openly ordain and have LGBT people serving at all levels mm-hmm. of authority. So.
And the Methodist Church does too. It's just not as open.
They're coming along.
Yeah, I mean, they're unfortunately, their book of discipline is difficult to change because of their polity and their system. But they are coming along, and we know that there are many United Methodist churches that are open hearts, open welcome, and we're grateful we serve alongside. But you know, when we had marriage equality just 2 years ago, when we had our big celebration on that night. You know, we did have to ask our United Methodist clergy to step to one side while we did a wedding, mm-hmm. Because we did not want them to get into trouble. That doesn't mean they weren't supportive, and we did not want to be responsible for them getting into trouble.
Eric has since been charged, and it was resolved,
acquitted, or whatever. Yeah.
So the United
Church of Christ does officially recognize same-sex marriage.
Yes, absolutely.
And it has for quite some time.
For a long time. Yeah,
and you know, Patty, you said, what's the next largest? You know what I think the next largest is? A synagogue.
In New York.
In New York, mm-hmm. they have about 3,000 members, predominantly LGBT. So that might be the next largest LGBT congregation.
More than likely.
Yeah. I don't know of another one that's... Nope. As large.
And I think people are really astounded when they hear that it's in this congregation is in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, what? It's like mind blowing, boggling, you know, what the heck are you talking about? You know, in Dallas, Texas. But we have so many firsts here.
We do. And I mean, the difference between here and Los Angeles, you know, talking about, you know, what's the differences between Christianity in England and here, but there's also cultural differences between Los Angeles and here. So I remember in LA, people would often say, you know, when it comes to Sunday, you know, they would talk about all the things that they were going to do. Church was usually at the bottom of the pile. Here in Dallas, it's, you know, what are you doing after church? I mean, it's an interesting shift in conversation. And even in the LGBT community, there's this notion that you go to church on Sunday and then you go off to do brunch or movies or theater.
It's something where I need to find a church that I like, not I'm going to reject my church altogether.
No.
And that's one thing Brian would only wear to your church, as accepting as it was, he would only go in with the yarmulke on, and it was his way of saying, I'm not Christian anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just he had to do that because the church had hurt him so much. Let's take our break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89, almost the Jewish Music Hour. You're listening to, I'm confused today. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with the heathen Laurent Landis. We're going to keep acknowledging that today. And the late Patty Fink, the late Josh or Chris, whichever personality who brought here.
Today is Patty Jr.
Oh, today Patty Jr. take it away, and we'll be back with more right after this.
This is Rawlins Gilliland, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And this is Lambda Weekly. Laurent, you wanted to just
say... Well, you were talking about how Brian, when he goes to the when he went to the church, he would always wear his yarmulke just to make sure. But he felt comfortable there.
Oh, he was moderately comfortable there. I mean, even, you know, Beth Elbanah meets at North Haven United Methodist, and even there he would not walk into the building without his yarmulke because he wanted to make sure everybody knew, I know I'm welcome here, but... one of the Jews, not one of the Methodists here.
Right.
It was just one of those things. It was a combination of both being so proud that he was Jewish and so relieved that he was no longer Christian because of what happened to him growing up Baptist, going to Dallas Baptist University and being thrown out of the place for being gay, even though he had a girlfriend at the time. I guess some of the Baptists there had better gaydar than he did.
Right.
And...
as well they should. It's chock full.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just wanted to, you know, follow that up with, you know, Danny and I are not regular churchgoers. You know, I'm me and my agnostic self, and he grew up Catholic. So we can never agree on what church to go to. But we have gone to Cathedral of Hope about a handful of times, and we've seen your sermons. And I tell you, we just felt absolutely welcomed and at ease, and I love your sermons. So though we have never officially joined, and we also bring Danny's sister sometimes, who is straight, and she loves the church also. So it's just a really great place to go, even if you have not decided what religion you are or whatever. So we appreciate that.
I enjoyed the service there, too.
I do. I really do.
And not just yours. When Jim Matulski was there, I enjoyed it. And I was there a number of times because he brought in such fabulous speakers. You know, and Brian was like, okay, you heard the speaker. Let's go. Let's go. It's just, wait, I want to meet him afterwards. I mean, Bishop Spong, when he was there, he came out to the back, and I said, Bishop, I'm Dave from Dallas Voice. And he said, gave me such a hug. And I said, I want to introduce my husband to you. And he gave Brian this big, you know, what a wonderful person. What?
Yeah.
I never felt so embraced by religion as at times as I have at Cathedral of Hope. It's just that kind of a place.
It is. It really is.
So so you felt welcome there, and you've enjoyed it, Laurent.
I have.
Oh, God.
And you still have time for brunch.
Oh, yeah. There's still plenty of time for brunch after worship.
Here's something I want to that maybe you can somehow explain. I know you're not a big Trump supporter. You headed his campaign here in Texas, but but you've changed.
He's seen the light.
I wouldn't describe him. We're kidding about that for anybody who doesn't know Reverend Neil. I wouldn't describe Trump as unreligious or non-Christian. His beliefs to me, as somebody who's not Christian, but looking in on it, seem to be anti-Christian.
Well, they certainly do not seem to conform to this, you know, version of the Sermon on the Mount that, you know, anyone can read in the book of Matthew, which really does talk about, you know, the blessed are the poor, blessed are the peacemakers. You know, I mean, how do you resolve, you know, this thesis of Jesus, a mandate of Jesus, with, you know, wanting to go to war, with, you know, not standing alongside those in Puerto Rico, you know, with all those.
You can't stand beside them. It's an island in this water.
I totally get that, but it, you know, but to send our resources, you know, they're American at the end of the day. You know, the whole ethos of what we're watching right now is I believe, in some ways, the last stand of white privilege.
And then you have the president of the Virgin Islands who gets in the way.
Well, I'm sure he enjoyed meeting himself. But you know, it fails for me to even comprehend that this can be done, and with then to claim that to be a part of Christianity. And what even shocks me even more is that, you know, evangelical conservative Christianity, you know, stands against so much of what it seems that Donald Trump is supporting. And nobody from that end of the market, or very few, there are a few starting to come out, but very few are saying anything. And I think part of that is because they've worked so hard over all these years to get white privilege and to get white people into power. And now look what they've got. And
you know, and do you think had Pastor Jeffress, who's at the White House regularly, and he's doing it, and we know this because we know him, he's doing it for recognition and for power,
personal gain.
We get that. Had he done that with Obama, Obama would have welcomed him to the White House too, because Obama was a big tent person.
Yeah, he would have welcomed him, but I don't think he would have taken advice from him, specifically around some of the issues that they are. You know, we know that about 2 or 3 days prior to the announcement about transgender people in the army, in the armed forces, that his council of six evangelical pastors met with President Donald Trump. And we know that part of that conversation was, you know, transgender people. And so there's no coincidence that these six, you know, very white, very influential, conservative Christian ministers are having a lot of influence. And it really is about a standoff of the culture war that we're having. And what's sad about all this is that the division in our country right now, along all sorts of lines, to the point where we can't even have conversation with each other. And I believe we've been given permission to basically hate on each other, which is certainly not the message of Jesus. And so it's time for us to, you know, more than resist, it's time for us to say enough is enough.
And I think, too, the really tough thing that I thought was even a deal breaker after all that was said and done was when Jeffress called for war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that God had somehow given permission, condoned it.
Yeah, like perhaps even nuclear war.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know, this guy has just lost it. He has absolutely lost it. And yet that sanctuary at First Baptist Church has people in it every Sunday morning. Yeah. And, you know, there's...
Well, they don't have people. They have the most people in Dallas in that church than any other church in the area.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's that's messed up. Yeah. That's really, really messed up.
But that's the Christianity we've been sold. I mean, that's part of the problem. That's why I say there's a big difference between churchianity and Christianity, is that, you know, we've been sold down the line a model of Christianity that has nothing to do with Jesus. Mm-hmm. We've been sold a model of Christianity that is about, you know, putting me first. It's about my self-interest. It's about making me feel good and having a show on a Sunday, rather than the experience of transformation. And the experience of transformation is what Jesus points us to all the time. So the transformation from me to us, the transformation from my self-interest to our self-interest, the transformation that then has the lasting effect. And people are leaving the evangelical church in their droves right now because they can't cope with this kind of, this disconnect between heart and head. And the church needs to wake up and see what it's doing to its people.
Mm-hmm. But I think, too, it jumps right in line with this whole idea that authoritarian, because there's a whole, I mean, it's been done in study after study, that the right-wing conservative part of our country seek out and want authoritarian control and leadership because they want to be told what to do. Mm-hmm. For them, everything is black and white. There's an absolute right and absolute wrong, and they want to live that in that lane. That's where they want to live. And so anyone who fulfills that for them, whether it's a Jeffress or a Trump, they welcome with open arms. And the rest of us don't see everything as black and white. We see some gray. Mm-hmm. And we see some nuance in some real people's lives, you know, and they aren't easy. And all people aren't all good and all bad. There's people who are, we're all flawed human beings.
I think the one that's pretty much all bad right now.
You know, I just wondered what it's like behind the scenes, you know, the workings of churches. You know, I know different denominations and different religions have their own set of rules that, you know, you all don't particularly bother each other. But in times of need, like we discussed earlier about getting together and helping what was going down after Hurricane Harvey, is there like an infighting of Christianity?
You know, who's going to get the glory from specific things that
they
do?
Yeah,
I know there is. You know, one of my ethos is, you know, the more we collaborate with one another, the more we meet people's needs. And it's really not about promoting Cathedral of Hope or even the United Church of Christ. It's about meeting people where they're at. And so, you know, whatever we can do to alleviate that, you know, we go down to Houston and provide for folks following the floodings, you know, to Las Vegas, whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, we're stronger together. And, you know, the only one who really should get some glory is the one we believe in, which is, you know, which right. is God. And if we want to make it about ourselves, then we've missed the whole point of what it means to be a follower.
Yeah, but isn't it kind of always about me?
That would be the Church of David.
Lord.
You know, it could be a new 501c3.
Right.
I got my ordination like Patty did because online. We both needed to perform a couple of weddings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's yeah. that's going to be a tenet of my online. Church. Right. So, okay, but with all this, I guess I don't get how these pastors sell it to their church members that this such unreligious garbage that they're spewing at the White House is somehow a form of Christianity and that it's something that we should follow.
Well, I think because they've strategically got themselves to this position. I often tell people that, you know, when it comes to communion in churches, we spend more time saying who's not welcome mm-hmm. than we do saying who is welcome.
And that's one thing at your church that will say.
Everyone's welcome.
It's always explained before communion. Anybody who would like to come up for communion, doesn't matter your denomination, doesn't matter whether or not you've been bar mitzvahed, mm-hmm. I guess I have the wording wrong. No, that's it. If you'd like to, you'd like to come up for communion, you're welcome.
Yeah.
That always freaked Brian out. Mm-hmm. To me, it was like, how nice and welcoming. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, what do we do? The first time he heard that there, and I said, we let the others go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you grow up in an institution that spends more time telling you who's not welcome, mm-hmm. you want to make sure that you are in it. And so the rules, the regulations that Patty was talking about, the ways in which we constrict people, as long as we give them a rule book and they can follow it, even if it's just for an hour on Sunday morning, then they are guaranteed their seat in heaven. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to think, they don't have to worry, they don't have to do anything apart from conform to the rule book. Mm-hmm. And you know, I always tell people, Christianity is not about dogma. It's about a set of values, it's a way of mm-hmm. life.
Right.
And if it's not about a way of life, then we've missed everything. We've missed everything.
And that's one thing that I've always said about religion, that the religion and the rules and the laws and everything else are there, and the customs and traditions are there to help you live your life. You don't live your life so that you can follow those traditions and laws only.
And that's what we've got right now. I think that's the issue that we have right now, is that we have made it all about the rules and the regulations just to make sure that I can get in.
And by saying how everybody is welcome, that actually explains a lot, because whenever anybody has asked me about coming to our service, you know, a Jewish Reform service, they always say, well, am I allowed? And of course, you're always welcome. You know, the one thing, don't expect anybody to try to convert you, because we don't do that. I mean, that if I ever tried to convert you, your conversion would be illegitimate. It would not be recognized.
We might put you on the board.
Might become president of the synagogue.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a treasurer right now who's an accountant who happened to show up one day. Patty.
Well, I was just going to say, I think a lot of these, the members in these churches, by and large, just my own personal observation, is they've almost, you see someone like a Jeff Frisco and say, you know, nuclear war with North Korea would be great. Let's do that. You know, that's probably what God's calling us to do. And you say, how can they possibly get from where they were to there? And I think so many of the congregants in these churches are like the frog in the boiling pot. You know, they sit there and they hear extreme after extreme after extreme every single week. More and more, and that becomes acceptable, but they don't ever feel the ouch of the hot water getting hotter and to the boiling point. And so, you know, they've been told that LGBT people are evil, that we're taking away something from them, that somehow when people have equal rights, someone loses rights. And it kind of goes down all the way down the line, so that it's not shocking to them as so-called Christians in a church led by a man like Jeffress to say, you know, nuclear war with North Korea would be great.
Yeah, but fortunately in this city,
they don't uprise and walk out. They don't do that.
Fortunately in this city, what got even more attention than that stupid comment was Arthur Stewart's post outside Midway Hills Christian Church, which said, no, Pastor Jeffress, nuclear war is not okay with God.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
And I think the other thing that's important about this, Patty, is I think the people who are in these churches are good people. You know, I think that they, you know, I don't think they're bad people. What I do believe, however, is that many of them have been sold this end times theology, and that nuclear war would actually be part of God's plan to bring about end times so that Christ would reign on the throne for 1,000 years, which is a part of the theology of end times. And so anything that feels like we might be, you know, living in the end times, which quite honestly every generation has believed, precipitates that kind of, oh well, that may be, you know, maybe this is the way that God's going to bring the end to the earth. Christ will reign for 1,000 years, and who knows what's going to happen after that.
Oh, okay. I was just going to ask you, ooh, just 1,000 years, what happens then?
Well, you know, we've had 2,000 years so far, you know, so or more. So many of us, many folks live into that your book of Revelation end times theology.
It's very prevalent.
Yeah, very prevalent. Mm-hmm. You know, and that brings about fear, and it brings about the oppression to control, and you know, a lot of people thrive on that because they somehow want to be controlled again, want to be told what to believe, when to believe it, how to believe it, and that's their ticket into heaven.
And Patty, you said that marriage equality, all these things, are taking things from them. I can think of one thing Cathedral of Hope is taking from them.
What's
very
that?
Serious. Congregants.
Yes.
Yeah. Congregants. Since you've been here about 2 years now. How much has the church grown?
So my understanding is before I got here, attendance was kind of going downwards, average about 750 on a Sunday. We're now about 1,200. So it's certainly grown. I don't think that's all attributed to me. I believe that there's stability. People are excited about what the cathedral is able to do now. And there's a re-energizing. And some of the folks who had left during that interim time are coming back. And so there's lots and lots of factors. And I think we've become a bit clearer about our mission and vision. That was, you know, yes, we still are the largest predominantly LGBT congregation, but we're really marketing ourselves as a vibrant, inclusive, progressive congregation, in that we will we're reclaiming Christianity and what it really means. And that's appealing, not just to LGBT people. Reclaiming it for those who have been kicked out, reclaiming it for those who have gone through reparative therapy, reclaiming it in such a way that it's healthy, and it's appealing to a general mass who are leaving evangelical churches because they just can't cope with the hate anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the heathen Laurent Landis, who admits that he actually does like going to Cathedral of Hope, and the late Patty Fink, who knows that if she set foot inside, she would burn.
It's the Southern Baptist in me.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, this is Valletta Lil, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will too.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with Laurent Landis and Patty Fink. And our guest is the Reverend Neil Cazares Thomas at Cathedral of Hope. They have services on, is it Saturdays?
Sundays. Well, we might start Saturdays, but we're Sundays right now.
Sundays right now. Okay.
Yeah.
And services are at 9 and 11.
And 1 o'clock
and
in Spanish.
And 1 o'clock is Spanish.
And then Wednesday is at 7:15.
At night.
Yep, night. Yeah.
Because 7:30 in the morning, who's going to do that?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can't ignore you're going to go. You know, we all know the horrible statistic that LGBT youth make up the highest proportion of teen suicides. And it's just my personal opinion, you know, I think that stems probably from religion. You know, their parents or their family is not accepting of them, and you know, a lot of times they get kicked out or they have to leave the house or whatever. So I think if, you know, if we grab them early and let them know, you know, everything's going to be okay, they're okay, there's nothing wrong with who they are, that would do a world of difference. So I think I've always thought, you know, in terms of religion, if we can get them into an affirming congregations like yours, have you ever had parents that came to your church because they have an LGBT child or kid, or what do the LGBT youth even say when they get there?
Yeah, so we actually had a great story 2 weeks ago. A straight couple showed up in church, and I talked to them afterwards, and we were having a conversation, and you know, part of my conversation is, what brought you here today, you know? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we have a 21-year-old son who's out, and we thought we were being really supportive of him. But he just challenged us recently about how unsupported he felt. And so they decided that they wanted to prove how supportive they were of him by switching churches from where they were going to Cathedral of Hope.
Oh, that's
amazing.
It really
and,
is.
You know, we get stories like that all the time from parents who are saying, we've got to stand with our kids on this. And the way that they want to do that is by finding a progressive congregation. And so they don't have to. So their kids are very clear where they sit on this mark. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful to hear those stories. You know, this past week we worked with a young transgender male, 14 years of age, was adopted when he was 2. The parents go to a conservative congregation. Mm-hmm. Went to the church one day, and the pastor stands up and says, "You know, you can't have any relationship with LGBT people." Comes home and puts their 14-year-old transgender boy into foster care.
Oh my God!
You know, so
why aren't charges brought against? I mean, well, here we're going off the religion part, but
yeah.
When I hear stories like that,
I don't get it either, Dave.
It's child abuse.
It is child abuse
in my book. You know, so we were contacted and said, you know, anybody who's could adopt or could foster. While they're trying to work out with the family, mm-hmm. want this kid back. And so that very same day, members of our church who are a transgender couple and have got a couple of transgender kids already, took that, now in the process of fostering that child, and you know, will be brought into a more supportive environment until this child's old enough to make any decision they want to. But we, you were saying about the right and wrong, about we live in such a binary world.
Mm-hmm.
That anything that strikes at that norm, the social norms, I should say, is questioned and challenged. And I think one of the great things about the Donald Trump era is that those of us who have been in this binary world or have been separated out in these binaries, men over here, women over here, straight over here, gay over here, black over there, what brown over there, and finding that we are having to come to the table together. And I think a great classic example of that was, you know, a year or so ago after an Orlando shooting. Mm-hmm. And we all gathered at the resource center.
When it was pouring.
It was pouring in rain.
Over 1,000 people.
Yep. And the imams came from the mosques, and black church leaders came, and LGBT people came, and we just stood in solidarity. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that would have been the same if it had been 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I do see some hope. I mean, I see some hope in what is changing in America. And that's why I say this is the last bash attempt at keeping hold of this dominant culture, which is a myth, but has been well spoken about.
And I want to ask this only half facetiously. What's Christian about a parent throwing their kid out?
Oh, there's nothing. But if you're taught that you will somehow be, your salvation will be affected, you know, your ticket into heaven will be affected if you support a sin. You know, that for some people is a heavy responsibility, that they want to get into heaven.
And guess who wins? I win and you lose if anything comes in the way of my ticket.
Yeah.
So I guess certain things are weighed, and caring for your kid is not as important as throwing them out because the kid might be doing something that you don't approve of.
Either you don't approve of, or perhaps there's something you've done. So, you know, a lot of, especially in reparative therapy, a lot of the conversation is around, you know, your mother was overbearing, you was deprived of emotion from your father, mm-hmm. you know, all of these things that, you know, when you hear that tape, mm-hmm. The better thing for you is to put your kid out so they are put in somewhere else where they can get a different method of care.
Mm-hmm.
It's sick. I'm not justifying it.
No, I know you're not, which is why I said I'm only half facetiously asking the question. I don't get it.
Nope.
The more religious somebody is, the more likely they are to throw their kid, and not the more religious they are, because that's not being religious.
The more churchianist.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I love that.
Exactly. Yep. The more likely they are to throw their kid out. Yep. Where do they get that?
I know.
That's okay. I mean, like you said, Laurent, that's just child abuse.
It is. Yeah.
And parents who do that should be either charged or they need to be charged with child support.
And neglect. Yeah.
Well, but charged for child support,
yeah.
So that, you know, it's your kid. It's not my responsibility to raise your kid, but I will because I can love your kid even though you can't, but you're going to help me financially do that.
Yeah. And how do you square that off with, you know, Jesus saying to his disciples, let the little children come unto me? You know, there was no, let the straight little children come unto me.
Right.
Right.
It was, let the little children come unto me.
Right.
It's simple.
But I think the worst thing, worse than kicking a kid out, because I do agree, if they're free to be away from that kind of abuse, the better, you know, that's a better situation. But so many kids, and I was raised Southern Baptist. I went to Baylor. I did the whole schmear.
Yeah.
And you know, the family that just does the daily slog of negativity. You know, that you're going to go to hell. That you're worthless. That, you know, you're not really my kid. And I can't wait till you turn 18, and I'm no longer responsible for you. That to me is more harmful than kicking him out.
You know,
because at least if you get kicked out, you have an opportunity to get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if your daily, you know, physical needs are not met, you don't have your clothes with you because they didn't let you pack bag. You know, I mean, that's that sort of thing. But at least you're away from that because that negativity is soul crushing.
You know, I talked to a GSA, a Gay Straight Alliance, this is about 2 years ago. And there was one kid there who she said, every time I go to church, and this she was a big, tough kid. So she said, every week I go to church and somebody points her finger at me and says, you're going to hell. And I said to her, you're tough, right? And she said, yeah. And I said, I can't do anything about the church you go to right now, but in 2 years, you'll be able to choose what church you go to. Mm-hmm. But right now, somebody points their finger at you, point your finger right back and say, how dare you judge me? And just that, I think, got her at least through the next week.
Yeah.
Just knowing that somebody understood
and that, oh, well, okay, so it's 2 years, but I'll have a choice eventually. And sometimes that's, you know, I said, don't rebel against your parents because, you know, that's where you live. You're going to go to your parents' church. So do you have any other suggestions for that kid?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, definitely find resources outside of the church. You know, find the GSAs, find the resource center, find something that is going to be affirming and is going to actually help you through those years. Because you're right. I mean, if you are living under your family's life and family's rules, there's not much you can do about it. But you have to find some of the outlets that enable you just to develop. I mean, that it's not about making choices right now, even though I don't think it's a choice, but it's about finding who you are, that authentic self that you are. And, you know, unfortunately we live in such a toxic world right now, and certainly a toxic theology in many of our churches around the globe. You know, we're watching evangelical spirituality now exported to Africa, to Uganda, to other mm-hmm. other places around the world, where we're just going to replicate what the damage that we've done to so many folks in our own country, because they know they're losing the war here.
So bullying in church is not a Christian principle.
No, it's not. No, and using your pulpit for bully pulpit is not a Christian value. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a misconception with not just LGBT youth, but LGBT community in general, that we want to run away and we have just turned our nose up to Christianity. And I don't think that's the case.
Not at all.
I think it's the case of we wanted to get away from the bullying. You know, that just, like you said, is soul crushing.
Yeah.
How did you, as a 15-year-old who recognized that you were indeed gay, realize that there is a seat for you at the table in Christianity?
Well, first of all, I mean, I knew that there was a lot big difference between what the church ruled and what God ordained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my mom not getting a marriage in the temple in the Mormon church, there's nothing about that in the Bible. There was nothing. And in fact, you know, much of the Bible around relationships isn't around monogamy anyway, or indeed about, you know, people being in their own religious experience. So I was very clear, even at that age, that the church could be wrong. And that carried me a long way in my own redemption of and reclaiming of my own spirituality. Plus, you know, anyone who's been educated, and I wish people were better educated about the Bible, and about the texts that we say we believe in, you know, anyone who has a level of education knows that this God we believe in is much, much bigger than anything that we could even try to pin down.
Mm-hmm.
And so my experience, you know, looking back, even at LGBT people who have been deeply spiritual throughout the whole of history, you know, the twin-spirited peoples, the shamans, the healers, they've always been LGBT people, predominantly LG people, and transgender people. You know, so we have a long history in our heritage. And if you want to take gay people out of the church, which if that's what you want, then, you know, let's close down almost every music program. Let's close down
right.
Every wedding experience. Let's close down, you know, a lot of the clergy who are serving either publicly or secretly. Mm-hmm. The church would be a very dull place without LGBT people in them. And, you know, quite honestly, they should be thanking God we're there. And saying, you know.
So going back to biblical living, when Patty lived in Libya, she grew up in Libya, her mother was offered several camels and a couple of goats
for her.
Yeah. So do you support concubines or?
So, you know, when people start saying to me about biblical marriage, I say, okay, let's talk about biblical marriage.
Right.
You know, let's not assume what biblical marriage is. You know, if we look at biblical marriage, we have to look at, you know, one man, several wives, concubines. You know, you divorce somebody by saying it three times. You stone the woman if she's been caught in adultery. You know, let's really.
You rape a woman, you have to marry.
And if your husband dies, your brother.
You have to marry.
Let's
talk about biblical. That's what I say about people that aren't educated about their Bible. They accept what the preacher says in the pulpit on a Sunday morning, and that's their gospel. That's
so, it. Patty's mother was right not to accept those camels?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think she should have taken them.
When you
moved back to the United States, you could have had a couple of camels here in your yard. Would have been nice.
Yes.
So, Reverend, you're a father. You have a beautiful little girl, so you won't be accepting it either.
Except, no, I will not be accepting it. No. I'm kind of wondering what I'm going to be like when she's 14.
Well,
I'm staying right there with you.
Right there. Ron is getting closer to that. Yeah. Two of you have something in common. Both of you, before the show, were talking about having daughters. And are you thinking of having another? Oh, God, no.
No. That doesn't mean that our husbands are not.
That's right. Yeah, yes. I think we've got this in common. Both our husbands want other children.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So we're going to get them together.
And say, good luck.
Yeah, right.
So in biblical same-sex marriage, that would be okay that you just swap husbands.
Right, right.
So,
you know, as long as we've got a contract and we're, you know,
right.
authentic, responsible, and all the rest of it about it.
You know. Concubinical.
Absolutely, go for it.
Okay, so Laurent, I'll put you on the spot first. Why no more kids?
I think I'm just too old now to start with a newborn.
Josh, he just said he's old. That's the first time on the air I think I've ever heard.
I was hoping to wait for a little while, but you know, my daughter's 8 years old now. You know, that's a huge gap in age if we were to have another baby right now, and it's time consuming just, you know, doing everything we should do for her. So.
My oldest sister is 14 and a half years older than me.
Wow.
So
I know it can be done, but what about you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm 51, so I've got a few years on you. She's demanding and exhausting, and you know, at the end of a day when you come home and you've done everything, and you know, it's hard. Now, that's not to say that we wouldn't foster. Now, I would not have fostered before we adopted. Because emotionally, I was not prepared to let a kid go back to what could be, you know, in my opinion, a less than great situation.
Yeah, same here.
But now I've adopted, and we have one that we know we can, you know, that we've stabilized those emotions on.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would adopt a foster again, and you know, this 14-year-old transgender boy. Yes, we would have had him come and stay with us
if there was no other choice.
There was no other choice. Yeah. But I don't think that I'm ready for another baby.
Do you know, hearing this, all studies that the right wing did and started in order to prove that gay people would not make good parents, and all of those studies showed that the best parents are two lesbians, and then come two gay men, then come straight couples. And they're close. It didn't really show straight people make bad parents. What it showed was, not only do gay couples and lesbian couples make good parents, they actually make slightly better parents. Is this part of why, maybe? Because you're both taking it so seriously. You know, Laurent, I know that you just got knocked up by accident, but that probably wouldn't happen again.
No, it's called birth control.
I think that's a big part of it.
But do you think that's part of it?
There are no accidents when a gay couple gets, like, you know, wants to be parents.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think the other thing is that, and we, first of all, we have to choose it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other thing is that we have to go through classes, and you know, we have to prove that we're going to be good parents. That's not the case for straight folks.
Right.
You know, most people just happen to get pregnant.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, like you said, our kids are no accidents. They're very much wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get it, you want to do it the right way.
And the other part of it, what I'm hearing from you, though, the way you describe being a parent, Laurent, is that you're saying, I'm just so busy, you know, Gabrielle needs to go here for this lesson and she needs to be there, and we need to, you know, and you don't just punter off on somebody else to do that kind of thing. You know, you're doing this, you're doing that. You don't have time for another one.
Mm-hmm.
You're spending full time. You are so devoted to being parents that in itself is a full-time job.
It is.
That's what makes great parents.
And it may be a little different if one of us was a stay-at-home parent, but we can afford that. So, no.
And my husband's you know, I have to give him most of the credit, because my job is just 24/7, and so he just does an amazing job at juggling our calendars and making sure that Sophia gets what she needs and the emotional support. And you know, I didn't really want to be that dad that comes home and tuck her into bed, and so you know, I've had to look at my schedule and say, okay, what does she need, and then what do we need, you know, as a couple. But we know that she's our first priority.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay, we're at the end of the hour. The next show isn't here yet, so we're going to do our top of the hour so that we're legal on the air, and then we're going to continue this conversation, if you can stick with us, a few more minutes. This is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink, and our guest is the Reverend Neil Cazares Thomas from Cathedral of Hope.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Okay, and this is kind of Lambda Weekly. Lambda Weekly overtime.
Lambda Weekly 2.0.
Patty, you brought something that...
Yeah, just a stunning, in 2017, comment from a lawmaker. There was as we remember, Tom Price, the former Health and Human Services Secretary under Trump, resigned in shame because he'd done all of these private jet flights and outrageous spending of taxpayer money for personal use. And it turns out his wife is also a physician. She's an anesthesiologist and is a member of the House of Representatives in Georgia. So she's a state rep in Georgia. And she was speaking with the director of the HIV/AIDS Epidemiology Surveillance Section of the Georgia Department of Health in a hearing this week. And she said some amazingly barbaric things about people with HIV/AIDS. Yeah. She said, she asked this physician, what are we legally able to do? I don't want to say the quarantine word, but I guess I just said it. What would you advise, or are there any methods legally that we could do that would curtail the spread of HIV/AIDS? And she went on to say, it just seems to me, this quote, it just seems to me it's almost frightening the number of people who are living that are potentially carriers. Well, they are carriers, but potential to spread, whereas in the past they died more readily, and then at that point they were not posing a risk. So we've got a huge population posing a risk if they're not in treatment. So essentially, I read this, I think she's actually calling for
a quarantine of how many million people?
Quarantine, if not death.
No, I was going to say, I read that as death. She would prefer that
people die.
They just die. But now it's like, damn, they're living longer.
Okay, so she's a good Christian. Would you like to comment on that brand of Christianity? It's...
And again, like Patty said, this is 2017. Yeah. Dear God.
Yeah. I mean, I was shocked. I was shocked
when I read that, too. Like, wow. Really?
And there's part of me that says, oh, don't be shocked. This is the era of Trump. And every day if we thought that adrenaline could kill us, we're testing that theory, the fight or flight, because we've been zzz, 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 like... Every hour,
yes.
Every
yes.
day since January 20th, it's just crazy. So, it's real mess.
Is that even backed by any Christian belief at all?
Well, perhaps by Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
all three of them.
I just wonder where some of this garbage comes from.
Yeah.
From people who call themselves religious. Okay, next show is here. They're just setting up. Neil, I really want to thank you for being here. I know you had to rush here from your service, and you made it in the nick of time.
He's got to get to brunch, man.
I'm going out on the boat.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice.
Two friends in from England, so.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are they also from Bournemouth?
They are indeed. They're also from Bournemouth.
From Bournemouth. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Come back sometime. Come see us again.
Love to. And next week, our guest is State Representative Victoria Niafe.
Yes.
This is wonderful.